Football Weekly.
Football Weekly Extra. Take your eye off the game for 1 second and what happens? The Carling Cup goes and gets interesting. The Seagulls have that Hitchcock-esque triumph over Man City. Arsenal's pesky kids go running wild like something out of Super Nanny, while Newcastle look to solve their Cockney Mafia issues with Terry Venables. Football Weekly Extra raises one quizzical eyebrow at it all and gasps at the full league programme that meanwhile they've only gone and had in Spain and Italy. Plus, we'll be casting a bemused glance at the weekend fixtures in the Premier League. All of that on Football Weekly Extra, the show that's like loo paper, essential, mostly recycled, and available at your convenience. On board today, and apologies for the lateness of this week's pod, entirely my fault, but grazie for your indulgence on that. We have John Ashdown.
Morning, listeners.
Indeed. And next to him, Fernando Duarte.
Buenas noches.
Indeed. And Paul Doyle.
Hello.
Hello to you, Paul. Good to hear you pumped up and excited about your return to podcasting. Plenty of stories to talk about. Fernando, somebody was asking, actually, can you shed any light about there's been a bit of fuss over the fact that Ronaldinho and Anderson have been mentioned in police taps back in Brazil, talking either on the phone of or about a drug dealer?
We shouldn't be surprised, for one thing, not because they are like clients or anything like that, but we've got to remember that footballers and drug dealers in Brazil come from the same social background.
Right.
And some of them even grew up in the same community. I'm not saying that it's all right. They should mind what they're doing. But I remember Adriano once was caught in the same car as a drug dealer, but he happens to be a guy he knew since he was 9 years old.
Right.
So it's a bit complicated to just associate them.
Julio Cesar as well.
But Julio Cesar was different. He was calling the drug dealer because he was complaining about some lack of security, some like muggings happening in his neighborhood. So he was actually going to the parallel power exerted by the drug dealers in Brazil. So that was a bit different. And Julio Cesar hasn't got a humble background. Come on.
Right. That's very interesting. I remember in Milan last year, Inter, they had phone taps on them and they found them discussing with this strange former organised crime-connected person about bringing coat hangers. And he says, OK, I've got some coat hangers in the back of my car. Mancini, the manager, was ringing up and saying, can you bring some coat hangers? So obviously there was a shortage of coat hangers there in Milan.
Not a shortage of a hangover, so you seem, yeah?
Well, indeed. Indeed. Now, I'm obliged to care about the League Cup this week, as you heard from that exciting opening, because all sorts of things have happened. John, you've been across a whole bundle of them, but Paul Doyle, I'm going to come to you first. You were very much across that exciting Newcastle Spurs match on, was it Tuesday?
It was last night.
Oh, Wednesday. Okay, I'm not trying to be snide, wrote Paul Doyle in his Minute by Minute, but the truth is I can't remember the last time I saw a match as bad as this. Probably, though, I played in it, says Paul. How bad was it?
Very, very, very bad. But particularly in the first half, when there was nothing on display whatsoever to suggest that a professional match was underway. It did improve slightly in the second half. Well, Spurs improved slightly in the second half. A little bit more cohesion. Once they got the goal, their first goal, courtesy of some slack Newcastle defending, would you believe, that restored a bit of confidence to them. And I think the slack Newcastle defending and Newcastle general slackness restored confidence to Spurs as well.
Two teams.
The second goal was even more embarrassing from a Newcastle point of view, and Newcastle were just a complete shambles, and Spurs were marginally less so. But it
less
was an appalling game, and 19,000 people turned up to watch it, which is absolutely staggering.
Right. It's the lowest crowd for 16 years.
I can't believe it wasn't lower. And what were they expecting, those 19,000 people?
Right.
They got faith.
They have. I have to say,
faith is bad.
There's a certain car crash element to this all, because there were disinterested parties tuning in just to see how bad it would get. And I'm looking at you, Fernando Duarte, because you were that rubbernecker.
That was a horrible match. But, you know, it's painful to see Newcastle, you know, basically crumbling down to pieces like that.
We're all very upset about it as well. What do they think about it in Brazil?
Well, they think like, wow. I mean, they know that Newcastle is that club that a lot of people go to see all the time. They never win anything, but people still come and see that. Some people admire that. I actually think it's remarkable how people still keep turning up and cheering. That's the true meaning of supporting or being a fanatic for a club. But how worse can it get, you know, when your defenders simply...
Stay tuned, is my advice, because the latest is that Terry Venables, is that right, Paul or John?
Well, they are the reports, and you can understand it from one point of view, because if
what,
the...
What point of view?
Well, if the if it's the structure at Newcastle is such that the what we call a manager is in fact only going to be a coach, Venables might quite actually suit that role, because everyone he's ever worked with does enthuse about his coaching. Even Alan Smith, who when he was at Leeds, I think, said that he was too good to be coaching me because the Leeds players weren't up to the sort of slick passing move we wanted to introduce. But you wouldn't want Venables to be involved in anything beyond that. This is a guy who, of course, in the past has been banned from sitting on the company's boards for, I think, 7 years it was. So Newcastle's probably the last place you'd want him to be getting involved in anything.
And it makes sense as well, doesn't it, to have a temporary manager while Mike Ashley's looking for a buyer rather than trying to make it a full-time appointment.
Right. He's a man that commands some respect as well, doesn't he? Among the players, doesn't he? Do you not think?
Yeah, the players all speak highly of him.
Especially when the Nigerians are talking about buying the club and restating Kevin Keegan. I kind of understand why Venables is a bit reticent of joining this sinking ship, unfortunately.
Oh, he's just wangling for more money. I mean, a short-term gig would suit him perfectly. Leeds, he didn't turn up on the first day because he was off filming something for the BBC. Same at Palace. This is half-hearted approach. That suits him perfectly.
Imagine letting your filming commitments getting in the way of your real job. That's absolutely shocking.
What is your real job?
Right, that's probably enough on Newcastle, although I should mention Hurricane 43 saying when it comes to their managers, Newcastle fans generally want a great ex-player with a passion for the club who obsesses about all these little details. So his money's on Gazza. That's not very nice, is it? What should be done about the horror tackles taking over, sweeping through English football? Pogatit's the latest example. John, the listeners demand answers.
On Monday, I defended Kevin Davies for his tackle, and so it seems a bit ridiculous for me to come in and have a go at Pogatit, although it was a lot higher and equally hard. But I don't. What else can you do? There's already a disciplinary procedure in place. He'll get a ban. What more do you want?
People feel it's not really stiff enough, although, of course, there are repercussions beyond just the ban for the players. Steve Gibson, the Middlesbrough owner, knows all too well because he's still paying out that $4.3 million as compensation for the former Manchester United youth player Ben Collett, who had his career ended by a Borough player in 2003.
Well, exactly. So there is a precedent that if somebody does get hurt, then there is a method of getting recompense for that.
I think there's something that can be done. Basically, it's something basic. You break a guy's leg, or you're caught doing something that is against the laws of the game, or even if you're not sent off, you should be punished for the same time the guy sidelined. For example, in the case of Eduardo, the Birmingham guy, I know that Sue says it was an accident, etc., but he still, wrecked this guy's career for a while. So he should serve this a punishment, for the same time the guy sidelined.
Right.
That would definitely make some people think twice before.
That
well, what if you accidentally kill someone in the course of a game? Should you be put down?
It is a bit different, isn't it? I think if you killed somebody with a tackle, you probably wouldn't step on the pitch again, unless you're Roy Keane. But
Pogatetz has experienced that kind of disciplinary procedure before when he was at Spartak Moscow, and he gave somebody a double leg fracture. You probably now read in all the repercussions from the challenge the other day. He was banned for 24 weeks. By the Russian Football Association.
I didn't know that.
And I think that was largely due to... That was meant to kind of in some way mirror the recuperation time of said player. Now, moving along still further, because there's all sorts of bizarre things that happened in the Carling Cup. And I don't think any can have been much stranger than the events at Brighton and Hove Albion, where Man City rolled on down, fresh from their enormous victory on the weekend in the Premier League, and probably got knocked out of the League Cup, which is probably not the end of their world, I know, but I doubt this was in their plans, getting beat, 2-2 draw, and then going out on penalties.
Yeah, very disappointing. It's the sort of tournament as well that they've got to be looking at having legitimate claims to win the whole thing.
City?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a sort of, maybe as a first stepping stone. They're not going to win the Premiership this year, but it's the Carling Cup and the FA Cup. They've got a feel, they've got a chance at. But you could just watch it. I only saw the highlights, didn't see not even the highlights really, more the goals. But you could hear in the Brighton crowd down there. What it meant when their two goals went in, and when the final penalty was it? I can't remember if the final penalty went in, didn't it? There was a save, and then Brighton scored, and it quite clearly mattered more to Brighton than it did to Manchester City.
No surprise. To put it in perspective, Brighton are what, third tier, without a permanent home.
Yeah, although it's sort of semi-permanent where we are now because it's...
About as colossal a mismatch as you could ever hope to have.
Pretty much, yeah. It was certainly the shock of the round.
Yeah, indeed. The other big story, of course, of the midweek games in England was Arsenal. Arsene Wenger making good on his promise to put out an unfeasibly young side in their home game against Sheffield United. John, I'm guessing you saw this game, at least the opening stages of it.
I didn't know because I was at Vicarage Road for the Watford West Ham game, but I've heard all about it from every Arsenal supporting colleague and friend.
You being a Sheffield United fan.
Being a Sheffield United fan, yeah. And you know, there's a lot of fuss been made over this young team, but the defending was utterly atrocious. And
but it must make you feel awful. You were beaten by kids.
It was pretty embarrassing, and it was a shocking performance. And you know, right back there with sort of the bad days of Robson and things. It doesn't reflect well on any of the senior pros at Bramall Lane. But we'll shake it off, and we'll just pretend it didn't happen, and move on.
Right,
I'm sure.
Yeah, because movie knows what Sheffield United does, isn't it?
But some degree of closure, and thank you for bringing that up, actually, Fernando. Some degree of closure has been achieved for you this week, John, because in other Sheffield United news, there's been that £30 million award against West Ham for the events of the 2006-07 season.
Yes, that's right.
When Sheffield United went down and West Ham didn't, largely due to the efforts of one Carlos Tevez, who it emerged in the final phases of the relegation battle. They weren't actually legally able to field, went on fielding anyway, earned the points that kept them up, and Sheffield United, therefore, has been taking them to court ever since.
Effectively, yeah, although there's West Ham fans get very cross when you say that Tevez wasn't eligible to play.
Well, he wasn't.
I think he was, but he shouldn't have been eligible to play. He was registered as a player and allowed to play, but then he should not have been.
Did the FA not say, after it had been brought to their attention that the paperwork hadn't been done properly, that he shouldn't be fielded anymore?
After the April tribunal,
yes,
they sorted the paperwork out, and after that, it was fine. And then it has come to light that they didn't sort the paperwork out. it's a complete mess,
yes.
And a lot of it is the Premier League's making, because they found out about the problems with the paperwork in January, if they'd said to themselves, this is a big problem, this is a big issue, this guy shouldn't be playing, or if we're letting him play, we shouldn't be letting him play. And it could well have a huge effect on the season and a huge financial effect for all the teams involved. We need to get this sorted out as a priority. Then a lot of the trouble would have been sorted, you know, if they'd done it in January or even February. But the fact that they let it trundle on till March, April time, and in the end, I think the actual announcement of the fine that West Ham got, the £5.5 million fine, came on, I think it was April 27th, which is incredibly late in the season. And it was the fact that it was so late played a part in their decision not to dock points, and that whole decision not to dock points has caused all the furore ever since.
What's the impact on the Hammers then? Is this money going to be paid out?
It's likely to go to the Court of Arbitration for Sport if West Ham are allowed to take it there. It's not been decided yet because, in theory, this decision is binding, I believe, in a court of law. But because CAS isn't a court of law, they can carry on, and it could go on for a while, and there could be an appeal process after CAS in the Swiss courts, all the rest of it. My sort of view is that it's hard to prove the exact sort of figures of how many pork pies you didn't sell because you weren't in the Premiership anymore, and how many, you know, if you had to sell a player with a long name on his back because you went down and you got a player who had a much shorter name, so you've lost out on £1.50 per letter on every replica.
However, there is a very specific figure to do with the TV money that you would have received.
Yeah, United have claimed a very specific figure down to a penny. I'd be very surprised if they saw the full amount, to be honest.
Right. Well, there you go. Some good news then for Sheffield United after that 6-0 thrashing by Arsenal. I have seen the future, and it's red and white and smells of Clearasil, says Wonk. I tell you what, one final thing on all of this. I mean, there were one or two other results. You probably know Chelsea beat Portsmouth 4-0, as is their wont, again. What would Portsmouth goals against figure be this season? Something quite remarkable. But the other Arsenal-related bit of news, though, good old Arsene coming in the crosshairs of one Michel Platini. Now, this seemed like a completely unprovoked attack and a fairly inexplicable one as well. Paul, can you offer me any explanation as to what Platini was getting at here?
Well, I think he was complaining about Arsenal's propensity for recruiting very young players from abroad.
Right.
Platini thinks they should stay in their own countries until much, much older. Mm. He's, you know... Blatter has similar views.
Right.
Of course, Platini has apologised today.
Oh, he has?
Yes, he has, on the advice of his dad, Aldo Platini, who was the first person to appoint Arsene Wenger as a manager way back at Nancy.
How curious. Yeah. Arsene Wenger's now got the freedom of Nancy, did you know that?
He's a Nancy boy.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed, in that sense alone, he is. And Wenger, though, well, that's extraordinary because the Platini, he was asked kind of three or four different questions on different topics by whoever was interviewing him. And on each one, he said, well, unlike what that idiot Arsene wants to do, and unlike what that criminal and business-obsessed Wenger's trying to do. So it does seem like he's got a real bee on in his bonnet.
Well, Wenger, it's... It makes no bones of the fact he doesn't have any regard for international football.
Right.
And thinks he's fundamentally opposed to any restriction on the freedom of movement of players from anywhere in the world.
Mm.
And that, of course, puts him at odds with the likes of Blatter and Platini, who, although they're in charge of two very different governing bodies, do have a similar philosophy in this.
Mm. Well, those Platini quotes, asked about video replays... Platini said, it would make me happy that Arsene Wenger never sees it. I like to talk about football. Him, about business. We must stop with Wenger and all that. When subsequently asked about Cluj and shock Champions League win over Roma, Platini said, that is what makes football so great. It is what people like Wenger do not want. Little clubs beating the big clubs because they want their business. Well, there you go. That's probably more than enough for part one of today's Football Weekly. So have a quick breather and we'll be back in a second with abroad stuff. Time now to take the pulse of the Spanish game with Dr. Sid Lowe. Sid, buenas tardes and that.
Hello. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you.
Now, you've gone and had a midweek round of games in the Liga.
Yeah, well, not entirely, not yet. Half of last night, another half tonight.
Okay.
Although the bulk of the big teams played last night, Barcelona, Sevilla, Real Madrid, they all played last night. So did Villarreal, who are currently top of the table.
Right.
But Valencia played tonight and they could go back to the top.
Now, on Monday, you were telling us about Gijón losing 6-1 at home to Barcelona. Real Madrid then went one better with a 7-1 defeat of the poor Asturians.
Yeah, poor old Sporting Gijón, who's now quite brilliantly conceded 13 goals in 3 days. And managed to score too, so that's pretty good going.
Better than Newcastle, now, I think, probably, isn't it?
Yeah, possibly. They're now bottom of the table, not got a single point, conceded 19 goals already. And on Monday when I told you their defence was pretty poor, I think I wasn't lying.
They
were totally torn apart by Real Madrid last night. Truth be told, it's one of those games where, I mean, whereas I'd said to you that Barcelona were brilliant at the weekend, because of course Barcelona always keep the ball nicely and it's really a question of whether they get the result that their football kind of suggests. With Real Madrid, it's always slightly different because Real Madrid have this ability to score goals without really necessarily, as the Spanish phrase goes, kind of elaborating the play. It just kind of happens. They've got a tremendous firepower, Real Madrid, but it was up against Sporting Gijón, so it's difficult to know for sure how much of a conclusion we should read from it.
Presumably Villarreal, who are going to play them next, they're going to beat them 8-1?
Well, it wouldn't be that surprising. Villarreal are playing very, very well indeed. I can't put my finger on is when Sporting Gijón will change their minds, because you know they're quite admirable in a way that they really went for Barcelona, they went for Real Madrid for a while. You know, most teams that come up, and particularly teams with a very small budget with no really good players, tend to play very, very defensive and basically try and kick their way to survival. Sporting Gijón have decided, no, we're going to go and attack, we're going to go and be a good side to watch. Unfortunately, obviously, you get beat 6-1 and then 7-1. I suspect it's time for them to change their minds. Their coach, Preciado, before the Real Madrid game, said in a press conference, well, everyone's talking about us being hammered 6-1 by Barcelona. But you know what? I think our style suits Real Madrid a little bit better. Maybe in 24 hours I'll be eating my words, but... Well, I think he's very much eating his words today. And it makes you think that perhaps against Villarreal they will be more defensive. The other thing I suppose they may feel is that you know, it's all well and good. They get kicking off in a row. Sevilla, who score 4 against them. Madrid, who score 6. Barcelona who scored 6, Madrid who scored 7, Villarreal who, as you just said, James, are probably going to go and score 8 now. And they might think, well, that's fine, get them out of the way, and then start playing teams of not such a good level who they can trade blows with, and perhaps then they will get a victory.
Sid, I don't get to see as much as this of the Spanish League as I'd like, but I'm wondering, is there an equivalent of Stoke in this Spanish League, a team that just plays high balls and very physical game? And if not, would such a team do reasonably well?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say there's a team like Stoke in that sense, but there's certainly, of the teams that are going to be near the bottom this year, I think there's 3 or 4 that play very, very defensively, that are fairly aggressive, that do really have no kind of attacking ambitions, that basically close themselves off. Certainly Osasuna are definitely not worth watching this year. Numancia are not a great side, although they did go to the Bernabeu and lose 4-3, so that was certainly worth watching. Mallorca are not a great side. Athletic Bilbao, you could say, are probably the closest thing, because they're very definitely based on aggression and the long ball game to some extent under their coach Joaquin Caparrós, but they have much more. It sort of feels a little bit different with Athletic, I think partly because they're not a recently promoted team. The other thing is that for a team to play like that in Spain would be harder because of the nature of the way the refereeing is handled in Spain and the nature of the way other players respond to physical contact in Spain compared to in England.
Well, interesting. Excellent answer there. Red Rob Ryan's posted in with a question for you, wondering how our man in Spain, Sid Lowe, rates Atletico Madrid's La Liga title chances.
Quite highly. I really do. I mean, I think they've got some very, very good players. They can keep everyone fit. They could have a very good run. They're also not involved in this strange thing that's happening in the Spanish league, this run where everybody plays Sevilla, Barcelona, Sevilla, Barcelona, Real Madrid and Villarreal in a row. Atletico Madrid are not in that little mix-up, and I wonder if that may help them, because they won't sort of be seen as part of this kind of, as some people in Spain are describing it, a kind of the mountain stage of the Tour de France, where teams go and play these 4 teams, really throw everything into it, and then relax after it, by which time they come and play Atletico Madrid, and it seems like just a normal game for them. Maybe Atletico have some advantage with that. I do think there's a genuine chance. I do think, looking at it this year, this is one of the most likely seasons in the last 4 or 5 years that Madrid and Barcelona won't win the league.
Interesting. OK, Ronaldes, posting in, says, please, could you ask Sid what the Spanish press are making of Ramos's start at Spurs?
Well, Yeah, they are. They're talking about it quite a lot, actually. They're talking about the... I mean, it's been fairly straight, the reporting of it, for the most part. It's been, look, this is the situation Ramos is in. Spurs are obviously dreadful this year. Underpinning it, of course, is a belief that Ramos is not to blame, and that he's been faced by a situation which, of course, he hasn't got the players he wanted. And, of course, they've recognised and talked a lot about losing Berbatov and losing Keane. Some have even gone back to talk about losing Defoe, and they'd be absolutely right to. There are some people here who are interested to see if Ramos will get the sack. And I was in Seville last night, and as you can probably imagine, I'm obviously not going to name names, but there are people at Sevilla within the club who the first thing they said when they saw me yesterday was, so is he going to get sacked then?
Yes, a certain amount of Schadenfreude, as they say.
A weensy bit.
All right, then. Listen, Hurricane 43, another question for you, lastly, Sid. Has anyone noticed how, since he stopped repeating the last thing James says, Sid now uses the phrase real sense a lot? Is this another of the great man's verbal tics, or are real sense one of La Liga's newly promoted teams? That's quite dry, but not entirely accurate, because you haven't said real sense once this evening, have you, Sid?
It's not entirely accurate. I haven't said Real Sense once this evening. I haven't yet stopped repeating your question, right? I didn't realise that I did use the word Real Sense.
I don't think you do. I think you probably just wanted to.
I just think some of our listeners sometimes they pay attention too much to
yes,
the pod, you know?
Indeed.
I doubt that's a problem.
There you go. Thank you, Sid. That's very, very good. And we look forward to speaking to you on Monday.
Yeah, it's then.
Now, moving on to Italy. Equally, Serie A had a bundle of games midweek round, and without in any way going into too much depth here, which we'll do perhaps on Monday with Susie Gambardelli, once the Milan derby has been played, which is the big game coming up this Sunday night, I should just mention that Inter have now taken sole command of the lead. Jose Mourinho coming up with another trademark 1-0 victory over Lecce. I could mention Walter Zenger's Catania. Giovinco playing in that game, hitting the bar. In fact, Juve hit the bar a couple of times, but a 1-1 draw. No Gigi Buffon, who was out following his injury on Sunday, but Alex Maniger played between the posts for Juve. So there you go. Giovinco, meanwhile, apparently is now a big target for Arsene Wenger, the aforementioned Arsene Wenger, the atomic ant, they call him over there. He's a tiny bloke.
How old is he now? That's the question.
Well, I know. I think he might be a bit... He's pretty young. He can't be older than 21.
Too old for Arsenal, that's what it seems, yeah?
All right.
Good thing about the Italian League, I recommend for any listener, just go to YouTube to watch Mourinho's press conferences. They are unbelievably funny. But,
funnily enough, he stopped turning up for them. He sends Beppe Baresi, Franco Baresi's brother, who's always been an Inter stalwart, in much the same way that Franco has always been a Milan one. And Beppe Baresi is Mourinho's kind of second in command. And he is now being delegated, a la Ferguson Queiroz or whatever, to do the business with the press. I think that Mourinho clearly loves his press conferences, and he's had a huge success winding everybody up and deploying Milanese dialect and et cetera, et cetera. But I guess he's decided to dose it just a bit because there's so much press conference. So much press coverage in Italy. That,
the way he was teasing Milan about the UEFA Cup, it's unbelievable. I still say.
What did he say?
It was something about the derby or some kind of jibe made by the Milan camp. I don't know exactly whom.
Yeah.
Who? But he said, okay, I'll be worried about that in the Champions League while they have to talk about the UEFA Cup, you know, their main target this season. And it was like, amazing. Vintage Mourinho.
All right, now, vintage stuff from Lazio, meanwhile, who are up to second. They bounced back from their big defeat 4-1 away to Milan on Sunday with a 3-0 win over the highly fancied Fiorentina. Atalanta are up there with them. They beat Cagliari. Napoli are up to fourth. Excellent stuff from Napoli. They beat Palermo 2-1. Roma got beaten 3-1 at Genoa. John Arnautovic was awful. Diego Milito scored a brace. Roma had a goal disallowed when it was 2-1, and they're very upset about that. Milan continue their comeback from disaster with a 2-1 success away at winless Regina. Goals from Pato and Borriello, who's now out for the derby, unfortunately, because of an injury. Ronaldinho, meanwhile, has been left on the bench ever since this business came out about how the recent Brazil game at home to, was it Bolivia when you...
Bolivia.
Yeah. And then afterwards, there was this all-night party with him, and I think Anderson was supposed to be involved, was he?
Well...
Again?
Everybody was in there. I mean,
all right.
But you know the story about the boxes of condoms, yeah? They made an order for like
the
40,
one.
Yeah, 40 boxes of condoms or something like that. Right, yeah.
Is there a similar story with this? Basically, they had a party and nobody was allowed in with mobile phones or anything and to prevent anyone taking pictures and that. And they were there until, what, 2 the next afternoon?
So they say.
But
it
anyway,
wouldn't surprise me, especially the way Ronaldinho is now. I mean,
right. Well, Milan have decided he can't play football at the moment, so they let him out a little bit at the end of games, but he's been dropped from the lineup as a result.
The newspapers are saying that he might...
Play on Sunday?
Yeah.
Really? We shall see. We shall see. I'd be amazed if Ancelotti decides to scrap his winning formula and revert to Ronaldinho. But then again, wouldn't be the first time that I've been amazed by events in Milan. Should mention that our Facebook page, as compiled by producer Pete, is up to 383 members. Yep.
It's more friends than I've got.
Well, it's a lot of friends. I don't think there's anything wrong with having less than 383 friends.
But are those real ties, or are those just like loose ties facilitated by technology? That's the question.
It is the question. Fernando. Apparently you can see pictures of us. Good, there you go. Now, the address, by the way, if you do want to post, is pretty simple. You just go to guardianunlimited.co.uk. No, just guardian.co.uk. /football, and you find the Football Weekly thing at the top, and there you go.
Have you noticed how people have been? There's been an increase in abuse though recently, James.
Yes, I have.
last week I was described as looking like a baby with a beard drawn on it.
Yes, I saw that as a direct. Yes,
which
you were just, quite flattered by
it's
that.
It's just it's just sort of symptomatic. I mean, in the last 2 weeks, I've been called names in the street. It's not the same names by people who listen to Football Weekly, but I was called Slapnut the other week. Last night, I was called a mug with a light on his head. I did have a light on my head because I was cycling home in the dark.
Oh,
but,
right.
The country's going to the dogs, isn't it? It's disgraceful.
So that abuse...
You bring out the worst in people.
Can I just clear up? That abuse was nothing to do with your participation in this podcast?
No. The on the street, no.
Oh, right,
no.
Okay.
I don't get recognised. I'm not like you, Jim, but I don't get recognised in the street.
Well, somebody said I look like Louis Theroux, so... Somebody said I look like Louis Theroux, so I think this would be like...
Do you?
Well, I don't think so. You know.
Okay.
I can see that.
Well, I tell you what, Fernando, we'll put your picture up on the Facebook page and we'll see what...
No, my picture's already up at the Guardian blog, by the way.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. Of course. Well, there you go. There you go. Paul, you still have that cheeky silhouette, don't you? Or have you come clean and had a full disclosure photographically?
I don't think I've had a photo taken.
No, okay, good. No. Right, there you go. Now, that's all well and good, but of far more interest to the listener is the weekend's fixture list in the Premier League. I'm going to skim through these. I think that's best. Arsenal are taking on Hull City. Looks fairly straightforward, that one, I would say. Mm-hmm. Arsenal have won 8 of their last 9 league games, 40 league games at the Emirates. They've only lost once. They haven't conceded a goal there in 408 minutes. Yes. Aston Villa taking on Sunderland. Be interesting to see if Aston Villa, if Martin O'Neill changes that starting 11, which he's used for every single game so far.
And it might be interesting to see as well the Sunderland reaction, Sunderland fans' reaction to Roy Keane after some of his comments in midweek.
Yeah, because they gave him a bit of abuse and he said he wasn't having it.
He wasn't going to tolerate it.
Why were they abusing him, John?
Because they were fairly useless in drawing with... They were 2-0 down against Northampton with 5 minutes to go and eventually clawed it back and won on penalties.
Right.
And yeah, he was getting a bit of stick from the ground in general and some locals that were sort of within earshot, which sort of begs the question, if Roy Keane can hear you...
There were people shouting from outside the stadium.
No, within the stadium. No, that's quite a big place.
What were they shouting? You looked like an egg with a light on its head.
No, but if you were close enough to Roy Keane that he could hear what you were saying, you wouldn't be... I wouldn't be shouting abuse at him.
Right. I'm just surprised that they would particularly target him as, you know, the...
It does seem strange, doesn't it? He's sort of seen as sort of a bit of a... Yeah. From the outside, it looks like everybody loves him up there, but maybe
well,
not.
Apparently not, eh? Well, there
we
you go.
We bought all those players.
Exactly. Everton-Liverpool, the fixture that's seen more red cards than any other in Premier League history, despite the fact that Kevin Davies isn't playing. I don't know, I'm sure that's statistically correct. Robbie Keane, still yet to score, and Liverpool, I notice, have posted the worst conversion rate in the division, just 7% of their shots actually finding the back of the net. That said, he said, rambling on, a win for Liverpool would make this the best start for the Reds under Rafa Benitez. I bet it doesn't feel like it, though, does it, Rafa? Well, I'm sorry, Fernando.
Basically, after watching them dropping points to Stoke,
yes,
I believe anything can happen. Everton will be really into this match, as they should, because it's the derby, etc. So it's a tricky one.
It is. All right. Any prediction from you as a Liverpool fan?
I would love them to win it, you know.
Well, of course you would. No,
we are the real team in Liverpool. I mean, we are the real team in Liverpool. Well, we're so real that Everton's going to Kirby. You know, they plan to get out of the town to leave the town for us. Well, so,
you know. How did you end up supporting Liverpool?
That's a good question. In 1981, I watched Flamengo playing Liverpool and Zico's...
That was 3-0.
3-0. Yeah. And I felt like, wow, that English team still wearing red shirts. It all seemed really nice. But then I went to Liverpool to study. I have a master's in football business awarded by Liverpool University. And I'm a huge Beatles fan. And playing the Beatles in one of those parties, I met my beloved wife, Flo Hicks. So my entire English connection started in Liverpool. I love that city. I actually admire Scousers.
What instrument were you playing?
The guitar. I was playing Eleanor Rigby.
Eleanor Rigby.
In a bossa nova beat, you know.
Oh, nice.
That's my trick. I was wearing like a turtleneck, pretending I was French, like Paul McCartney used to do.
Right. But he was been playing the bass, though, surely.
He's a fantastic guitar player. You know, the Taxman, the solo, is actually his solo, not George Harrison's solo.
All right.
Yeah.
Because George Harrison, I would have classically thought as the... But hey, that's just me.
Yeah, I was playing Eleanor Rigby in bossa nova. One day I'll bring the guitar now.
So who was your favourite Beatle then, Paul McCartney?
My favourite Beatle, George Harrison, believe me.
Yeah. I'd go along with that as well. Yeah. This sort of lost the Facebook crowd at this point. I think what this is about. Anyway, right.
I actually got a George Harrison Appreciation Society group on Facebook.
So. Have you?
Yep.
Well, are they linked? Are they friends with us now? Well, can we form a mighty alliance?
We will form a mighty alliance, yeah.
Right, okay. Now, indeed. Fulham against West Ham. Fulham have only won one of the last 15 London derbies in the Premier League, but it was that resounding victory over Arsenal just the other day, so who knows if they're not going to come
Bobby Zamora will score for Fulham on that. He's looked really good for them this season since leaving West Ham.
He has, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And West Ham are fairly stretched with injuries. I saw them on Tuesday night and they had to play Julian Faubert at right back.
Yes.
And he had a torrid, horrible time against the Watford left winger Lionel Ainsworth, who could actually run rather quickly and just tore past him. And by the second half, Watford were giving the ball to Ainsworth and just saying run at him, because he was going past him every single time. So I don't know what the sort of, if there's a people going to be recovering or not, but they might have a few problems there.
I saw that. I wondered if Faubé used to be maybe a right back in his time at Bordeaux.
No, he didn't. But I was wondering if he was deployed there not because of injuries, but because that's the way Zola will envisage playing, a very attacking fullback. So.
Well, they did play. They did have five in midfield.
Oh, really?
With who played wide? Etherington on one side, and somebody else whose name I can't remember on the other. So the, I suppose the midfield was solid enough that you could have attacking fullbacks. Walter Lopez, though, got forward, on the other side, got forward far more than Faubé did, cause, simply because Faubé was on the back foot all the time against Watford's winger. So yeah, they might have a few troubles at Craven Cottage.
Mm. Manchester United against Bolton Wanderers. United, of course, have a hugely good record against the Trotters at Old Trafford. And don't think we need to dwell too much on that one, do we? There's not going to be any upsets there or anything. Borough taking on West Brom. Newcastle, are things going to get worse for them? They're at home to Blackburn Rovers, who have a very good record at St James's Park.
Judging on last night's performance, anyone could
the way things
Newcastle.
Are going.
Yeah. Ooh. All right, then. Stoke hosting Chelsea. Stoke still have that phenomenal record. They've only had 9 shots on target, but they've scored on 7 of them. Similarly, I found this a curious stat. Only 3 of Chelsea's last 20 league goals have been scored by strikers. Interesting. And
this is going to be a very interesting match.
What, the Stoke-Chelsea? I have the feeling it might be, yeah.
I mean, tactically speaking, it is quite curious to see how Felipe will actually behave if Stoke go for the classic thing, like, let's, you know, bully Chelsea into submission or something like that, because they can.
Yeah,
in a certain way.
You think?
I don't think they can. I don't think you can bully Chelsea.
Deco will be out for this game, and so will Carvalho, which will help Stoke's chances. They've also got the long arm of Delap to throw into the mix, quite literally. But Chelsea's record, very, very impressive. They struggled a bit on their last away game up north against Wigan.
Yeah, Wigan were running circles against them that game.
Wigan are very different to Stoke. I mean, Stoke's direct approach will suit Chelsea. I mean, John Terry, that's his strength. He's very good at defending in that way.
Right.
It's the more nimble approaches that can kind of catch him out from time to time. So I'm not sure how Alex will cope. I'm not sure about that, because I haven't seen that much of him against that sort of opposition. Well, I'd expect Chelsea to beat them. They're one side that Stoke cannot outmuscle.
Mm. Pottery-based listeners will be questioning my use of the term north when referring to this fixture.
Well, it's north of London, isn't it?
It is north, yeah, it's north of London, north sort of where north I'm sitting right now. So there you go. John, did you want to say something?
I was just going to say, in my head, I was running through a joke that involved Stoke's cheerleaders. Have you heard that Stoke have got some new cheerleaders?
No.
They're called the Dilap Dancers. Sorry, it probably wasn't worth it. That's why I didn't say it. I was just thinking it.
Portsmouth are hosting Spurs, and Jermain Defoe will be up for this one, presumably. He scored a bundle of goals in this fixture while playing for Spurs, and now can't stop scoring for Pompey. So there you go. And Spurs have won just one of their last 12 Premier League games. Are we seeing a Pompey home win here?
Hard to tell, isn't it? They've conceded 10 goals in the last 2 games, Portsmouth. And
oof.
It depends. I think we mentioned it on Monday, the Red Knapp's 3-5-2 and things, and it's if he finally ditches that and plays 4-4-2. I think Portsmouth are as good a side as Tottenham at the moment, and or at least potentially are, and will likely beat them.
Well, there you go. And finally, Wigan hosting Man City. Wigan have only won, despite all the plaudits they received as the season began, 1 game in 6 attempts. Obviously, Robinho is off to a flying start with Man City, Sean Wright Phillips as well since his return. And what do you think? New look City, too much for the Latics?
Well, one never know. They had an amazing match against Chelsea, so...
And lost?
Still.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't that they were totally outplayed or outclassed in their game, so... City are beatable, as we've just seen this week, so...
Well, that is true. That is true. In the meantime, that's it for today. So, many, many thanks. You can always put your comments there on our Football Weekly page. Don't forget our fantasy football as well, which is tremendous fun and is running at the moment. And we've got that Facebook thing now as well. So that's terrific. Many thanks, producer Pete, John Ashdown, Fernando Duarte.
Always a pleasure.
And Big Paul Doyle.
Thanks, James.
And we look forward to catching up with you all on Monday. Have a terrific weekend.